Hey there, you're welcome to Founders Connect, a show where I have conversations with amazing entrepreneurs and operators in Africa. This is the right show for you to be listening to if you love behind-the-scenes stories about people, their careers, and not their businesses. My name is PC Timmy, and I'm very, very, very delighted to be your host. You can follow this conversation on social media, hashtag Founders Connect. You can watch the video of each episode on my YouTube channel at PC Timmy, or just search for Founders Connect on YouTube to find the playlist. Also, please share this podcast, subscribe to the podcast, leave a comment, leave a rating, and you know, share it, hashtag Founders Connect. Enjoy the episode. Hi there, you're welcome to another episode of Founders Connect. Here I have conversations with amazing entrepreneurs and operators in the African tech ecosystem. Today I'm speaking with Damilare. He's the co-founder and CEO of Foodlama. Foodlama is a browser extension that helps you find food easily and matching to your preferences.
Yes and no. I would say it better, but yeah, it's a good start.
Okay, cool. So anyway, Damilare is the founder and CEO of Foodlama. He's going to tell us everything about his journey to entrepreneurship, how he started Foodlama, what they're currently building, and all the lessons he has learned. So make sure you stay and watch this video to the end. I'll see you at the end. Hi, Dami.
Hi.
How you doing?
Well, really excited to be on Founders Connect.
I'm excited to have you here too.
Yeah, I've seen all the amazing entrepreneurs you've interviewed.
Like yourself?
Yeah, well, I feel privileged. I don't know how amazing I am compared to some of the guys you've interviewed, but yeah, just privileged to be on the set.
Thank you so much for honoring me with this. I'm really interested. I mean, I know you. We say all the time, but I don't really know the story. So I want to know the story today. We'll get into Foodlama, but I typically would like to just start from you, right? So like, tell me about your background, where you grew up. What was growing up like for you? What really stuck in your childhood that you think you've carried over to who you are right now?
I think the most important lesson I learned was that my parents, my dad worked in the financial services sector, worked in the bank for a bit. My mom, career civil servant before she retired. And while she was a career civil servant, she also had all the side businesses. So I'd always been doing some side businesses. I won't say like entrepreneur, but it was some side business.
Hustle at least.
Running at stores, knowing how to bargain and negotiate stuff. But my dad, when he had to leave the bank, I didn't feel like it was a really pleasant experience for us as a family. Mm. So it kind of left an impression on me that I wanted to do something different. And I won't say that I knew I was going to be entrepreneurship. I think I'm one of the accidental entrepreneurs. I never woke up one day and say, oh man, I'm going to be an entrepreneur. No, right. I never did. But I just wanted something different. So while in the uni, I was studying chemical engineering at University of Lagos. And I was on this track to, I think, finishing with like a first class or something. I fell ill and I had some significant illness for a year. I had tuberculosis for a year, so I had to be out of school for a bit. And that significantly dropped my grades. And so when I came back, I'm like, well, you can't make first class again. Yeah, you'll do, if you don't even put too much effort, you will do 2-1 fairly well. So I told myself, I'm done with this chemical engineering. Now, there's a backstory to even how I landed on chemical engineering.
Tell me a little bit of the backstory.
I never knew what I wanted to do. I mean, I think everyone never really knew what they wanted to do. But I used to have a family friend or like an uncle that was working with Chevron then. And when he would come in, oh, yeah, there's a further backstory. So I wanted to be a civil engineer. I think I knew that. But doing technical drawing, I would sweat through my palms. So I would do a fantastic design through TD. But I would sweat through my palms and I would stain the entire board. Mm. And then it would drop my grades. So I was like, man, this TD thing is not, I'm not sure, I'm not feeling it, but I still wanted to be a civil engineer. Then I had this uncle who, if he just shows up at family parties, everything is shut down because he brings money. And you ask him, what's he doing? He's a chemical engineer, works with Chevron.
Okay, oil money.
Sounds like something worth doing. So that's how I wanted to be a petrochemical engineer. But then they convinced you, well, that's too narrow. If petroleum doesn't work, do you want to say, okay, let's do chemical engineering. So I was on that track. Fast forward to the university and my experience then. By that time, I think I already lost interest in chemical engineering, to be honest. So I started to do a lot more business reading. I'll go to the library, I'll read, I stopped attending classes. My parents probably don't know this part of the story. Because if they knew, they would have chased me out of school. But I stopped going to classes actively. I started reading a lot more business books. And then in my final year, someone told me to write a business plan. What does a year for student know? But they said they write a business plan. They paid me good money for it. I wrote it, apparently the business plan made sense. I'm like, you can start making money here. And that's how I started doing some side gigs. So I started organizing events. I did some dance events back then.
You used to dance?
I think I can still dance, like, I think so. But yeah, so I did something with some people then, made some money. And I started saying that, okay, yeah, it's not a lot of money, but you don't really have to go through the 9-to-5 journey. Mm. But when I finished school, my parents just wanted me to work. Like, so I thought to myself, well, I think I owe it to my parents to try and get a job. And I applied to multiple places, got a job in the bank. I said I was not in the bank. I had some kind of offer from a few consulting places. I just knew I didn't want to, but it kept nudging me up until I got a job with Nestle. And it kind of aligned with my career. It seemed like my parents were proud. It seemed like they were proud, because before I even resumed, they were telling someone, oh, my son works with Nestle, he does this. So you see all this. So you can't take that away from your parents. Yeah. So I set myself and said, you know what, I'll just do this thing. I don't know what will pan out, but I'll do it.
And so you're an engineer at Nestle?
I was an engineer at Nestle. Right. And I think three life events happened, because fast forward to that, I did the regular working. I was privileged at Nestle. I think the experience I had at Nestle significantly shaped my life. Mm. Because one of the things Nestle did was, on the program, they sent me to all the different functions of the business. So I learned accounting, I learned pure engineering, I learned supply chain. It kind of made me well-rounded, which was not a skill set that many of the employees of Nestle had at the time. Mm. And so when I speak, I think it always gave me a sense of speaking from a well-rounded perspective, as against just someone who is specialized in a particular operational field. But that turned out to be a significant influence on my life, or the outcomes of my life. Because it always left me with a cursory look at things. Like, I would do a lot of reading. I read crazily. Like, I read a lot of things. So one thing that happened was, I just solved a significant problem on the line. Then I got to the notice board and I saw a notice that they said, oh, someone is going on what we call expatriation. Now, they would send you on expatriation when you've been an excellent contributor to the business. And then the person has contributed significantly. Now, this is pride. Not a warning, because I felt I was more intelligent than the person. I felt I had more value to the business than the person. And so I was like, well, why is this person more recognized? And me, I'm solving problem. I'm claiming local champion. Now, for context, if you know where Nestle factory is in Nigeria, it's in one remote, it's in Agbara, right? Which is like, it's not back of town, but it's back of town. Nothing typically would take you to Agbara. So I felt like you're just forming local champion in this environment, while all the key decisions were being made in HQ, the iFlyers were being recognized. So I wanted to move to the commercial side of business. So I discussed with my line manager, and he's like, it's not a typical move to move from engineering to commercial. And the second event that happened was, there was an incident where the cooker exploded while I was in charge of the plant. And the politics of that, I don't want to get into that, but the politics of that left not a great taste in my mouth. So I thought I was just going to jump out. I resigned maybe the next day after that incident. I didn't have a thinking about it. My manager tried to convince me, why are you resigning? You have a great future. You showed me all the roadmap. I'm like, thank you very much, but no thank you. And I jumped into it. If I reflect on that, I think it was a foolish decision. Because I had my apartment. It was a really good apartment. I was living large in Agbara, earning good money, living in Agbara, like a big boy. But I left, I sold everything in the apartment. I just carried my bag and I left Agbara and I never looked back. I did all this in less than 2 weeks. Right, it looked crazy because I didn't tell my parents, because I know if I told my parents,
they wouldn't agree.
It would have been a bad decision, or a terrible decision. Because eventually, when I told my dad a few months after, he had to start calling all the people that he knew that it's a mistake, or it was youthful exuberance.
It was youthful months exuberance. After,
let him resume, he can come back. Or he did. So I thought I was going to just come to Lagos, because moving from Agbara to Lagos could be a bit of a challenge. Mm. So I said Lagos. Agbara is in Lagos, but you know it's a distance. Especially if you're going through that mile 2 Okoko Road, it's a real travel or a real journey. So I moved down to town, was staying with a friend, and I started to apply to advertising agencies, because it looked like that was a pathway. I found someone who would use that similar pathway to move from engineering to the commercial side of business. So
the business,
go to advertising, then come back into the business as a commercial marketing person. So I started applying to quite a few advertising agencies, but it didn't pan out as I really wanted to. I got an offer at one of the top advertising agency, Nige. But then they said they had to delay the resumption for a few months. But hunger was worrying me. Because even my apartment that I sold it at a pretty steep price that the person who bought it, who was my guy, could not pay at once. So it was doing monthly payments, right? And then it would pay like a chunk. So I was like, man, guy, I'm broke. So in that time, in looking for a job, I picked up GNLD job, right? I sold supplements. When I was in panning out, because I had to, some stories, like I think everyone has the stories, but just reflecting on those stories, very fun, because I think it's come back to embody who I am. Brought some money from my mom. I went to buy GNLD drugs, and then Rain beat all the products, and the products got spoiled. And then I did lesson teacher. I did all this very quickly. But then I finally got a job, which a few months after I got a job with one of the advertising agencies. And again, privileged, because while I was going into that role, I was asking for a lower pay. I was like, you know what, I just want to just jump in. But because of the quality of responses, I asked my manager, my MD then, why did he think I was worth it? And he said it was just the quality of responses, saying things like, why do you think you can succeed in advertising? And I'm like, well, I believe in the universe. Anything you commit your heart to, the universe just supports you and makes it work. So I was like, oh, okay, that's shocking. So they gave me even a higher pay than where I was coming from at Nestle, right? And that just made that transition worthwhile for me. The other thing that happened was I found favor. And I mean, this is not to appeal to anyone who is religious or irreligious. But I found real favor in the sight of my boss, because it put me in front of very high quality people. I worked on quite a few marketing campaigns for government agencies. I've handled quite a few projects that I didn't think I was qualified to at that point. But I was just learning. It was my boss called it red eye. I remember two things that my boss used to say then, and I'm happy to mention his name, Mr. Tunji Olubodi. What he used to say then is something called minute observation of nature, MON. And it left me always doing certain things. Even till date, I still do that. I don't take pathways, the same pathways. Like the way I came to this place now, if I'm going back, I'll try to break from that norm. I'll try to take somewhere else, because that's, the world is organized to program you in the way you think. So I'm always looking for an alternate way of maybe where I'm working. So he always taught me those things. The other thing he always taught me is that red eye, right? Maybe agency people will understand this, because sometimes even you don't know the answer, clients will ask you, and you've not thought about it. You just use red eye. It's always like what they teach MBA people that go to the US. You just say, even just you, bubble. You will be questioning yourself. This thing I'm saying, does it make sense? But that in itself really made me frame my view of the world and how I saw the world. And so a few years down the line, I'd worked on quite a few brands. I'd worked on quite a few political campaigns and political campaign strategy. I thought I wanted to do something. Now, I didn't know what I wanted to do, to be honest. But I just thought I was going to do something. I was just itching. I just became uncomfortable. I wanted to do something. And so I thought, you know what? Why can't I do something in the merchandising space?
Okay. Right?
And the reason why is that, having worked in the advertising agency, I worked with quite a lot of creatives, and I saw that they were not making as much money. So if you take like the average creative, their pathway to monetization is either shows or sponsorships, right? If it doesn't come, they don't make any money. And then I remember reading Life of Pablo, Kanye West launched Life of Pablo, and they made significant money in South Africa just on merchandising. I'm like, why don't we have this kind of opportunities in Nigeria for individuals to make money like creatives? So I thought, what if we could work with a lot of creatives and do all that? And so that was my journey. There's a backstory, but that's not relevant. That was my journey into entrepreneurship. Stumbled on it, reached out to a few creatives. Some of them thought I was speaking from my rear. Some of them thought it made sense. Stumbled through that, and tech started to pick up in Nigeria.
And what year was this at this time?
This was 2015, early 2016. So you started to hear people, all this, I didn't know what tech was, right? But you started to hear all these conversations around tech. Now, I knew, to be fair, I think I knew what tech was, because when I was working in an advertising agency, I used to work on an InterSwitch account. So it kind of gave me an exposure, but it was you just met it on the way. And so I thought, what if we could leverage technology to doing this?
Doing the merchandising.
Merchandising, right? What if we could leverage technology? So I built a company called Souvenir.com that's kind of similar to what Printable does now in Nige. And the idea was creatives can create designs on items, monetize it with their own community, and then they would take a cut off of whatever they monetize, and then we do fulfillment and do customer care. And so we worked with quite a few faith-based organizations, charities, quite a few brands that we did that for. And that went very well for a few years. For a few years I did that. Although there was still an agency in itself that wasn't doing technology. we worked with quite a lot of large brands. So sometimes we would do marketing comms. We did that, but there was a technology front to merchandising with creatives. We tried to do some movie merchandising. We were in conversations with like some of the biggest movies, but just looked like the market wasn't really there, right? In terms of, there's just a lot of structural challenges that need to be solved, rights or ownership. Yeah, we tried to work with quite a few people then. Maybe we were ahead of the time, maybe there was just no market, we never would know. So I did that for a bit, and then based on my experience, yeah, I'm trying to think of what other story is relevant. I thought that technology was going to be a critical part.
Right. And was that country. Because of Souvenir.com?
Not necessarily. I think it was just my reading. So while I was doing Souvenir, I got into the Alibaba Fellowship, which was this program that we did significant revenues with Souvenir. And so I got into Alibaba Fellowship, which was something that Jack Ma launched for African entrepreneurs. I was on the first cohort that picked about 24 entrepreneurs from 11 African countries. And so I spent some time in China.
Okay.
And just seeing what China was at that point, this was 2017, right? Just seeing what it was or what the evolution was at that point, I'm like, yeah, this is when, I mean, listening to their story, I'm like, this is where Nigeria used to, this is where Nigeria currently is. So I see the pathway for evolution and I'm like, yeah, I need to get on that ship. Is that I get in or go? So I started to think about what data, the role of data, and how we could leverage the technology in terms of mobile phone, and how we've kind of leapfrogged from PCs down to like mobile phone. I had a lot of hypotheses around that. So started building a company called Azina.
Did you stop Souvenir.com to do Azina?
I think we were doing it side by side.
Plus the agency.
Plus the agency. Like, yeah.
Okay.
Like,
Multiple businesses going on.
I hear the point of focus now. I think I'm a lot more focused now. But then
we were just
doing quite a lot of things, trying to figure stuff out. But over time, the Souvenir kind of paled out in terms of what we're trying to pursue compared to Azina. And then that started to take off. But the biggest challenge that I think we faced was, in terms of Azina, was speaking to brands. The market in itself is not sophisticated enough for the investment. So just the background of what Azina does. Azina provided intelligence and data for CPGs, for consumer packages, so FMCGs, like the likes.
So you kind of went back to your Nestle roots.
Yeah, I went back to. Because one of the challenges I found was that, just in terms of how they inform what you call new product development and portfolio diversification, it was not as informed as I thought it was in other markets.
Right.
But the biggest shock was around pricing, right? Because in markets like ours, like Nigeria, the bigger challenge is not around product diversification from product or product differentiation from product sake. It's just price. It's a race to the bottom. Like, who can get it in the smallest sachet? Who can get it in the best price?
Yeah.
And so the data set that you really needed wasn't something that you could get from consumers. You needed to get from a lot of other sources. And so we had conversations with telecoms providers to kind of aggregate that source, and we're working on that. But I had two significant life events also that happened. The first was I had an accident, right, in Lagos. And I mean, I've spoken about this extensively, but I would just try to paraphrase it. It was an accident I had in GRA, but in one night, I experienced the state of healthcare, the state of police, the state of power, like electricity.
All three
in one night. And I cried in that night, because by the time I was done, or when I was dealt with, I was not done. The system dealt with me. I told myself, I'm done with this country. Now, before then, most people didn't even think that I could ever even I didn't see myself ever living outside Nigeria. But I knew that I didn't want to continue my family in Nigeria. The second thing was that I just found that I wanted to be a dad, right? And so combining those two life events, I said, no, I'm not doing this in Nigeria. So my initial plan was, let me move my family abroad. Maybe I'll continue to shuttle Nigeria, continue to work on Azina, continue to do this. But it didn't pan out that way, because when I was moving, I signed up just out of curiosity, I just signed up on a few co-founder matchmaking platforms, like what's happening in the UK. And I signed up on this platform, which is like a Tinder for co-founders, which is how I met my co-founders.
Up on this time, have you always built by yourself, or you always have co-founders?
I've always had co-founders. I think the, well, in the past, maybe some of the side bad things I've done it myself.
But for Azina and for Azina, for Sabrina,
yes, I've always had co-founders. Because my thesis is that it's just a very hard journey. Just, I mean, I don't mind, I'm not trying to be Dangote. I'm just trying to leave small dent on the world, right? Yeah. I'm not trying to be Dangote. And so I always want someone I can share the body on the journey with. Yeah. So I was looking for co-founders on this platform called StartUp. And my co-founder reached out to me. Now, because of my background in food tech, in food manufacturing and all that, he thought it was interesting. And then he starts to pitch Food Lava to me, and I'm like, guy, we don't have allergies in Nigeria. Where I'm coming from like that, yo. He was telling me based on his own personal experience. So just for context, at this point, my co-founder was 16.
16?
Yes, at this point when he reached out to me.
I didn't what year was know. This?
This was 2021.
So right. He's 18 now?
18 now.
Okay.
So at this point when he reached out to me, I didn't even know his age, but I thought he just told me personal experience that he is gluten intolerant, not allergic, as your brother was gluten intolerant, mom's vegan, and all that. These are things that are so far
fetched. Really yeah.
She said, give me a week, let me do a lot more reading up, let me see what the opportunity is. And I thought, this is a significant problem. It's not a common problem in our part of the world.
But
I see that it's a problem that could creep up in our part of the world. But here, it's a significant problem. And so after a week, after doing a lot more reading, I said, yeah, okay, let's explore what it would look like. Now, neither of us is technical. Mm. So after going back and forth, we had like several meetings. My role was then to get a third co-founder who is technical. And we found my third co-founder on the same platform, right? But that's how we found each other and began the journey for Food Llama. And
at what point did you decide, okay, I'm going to do Food Llama as against trying to build Aziza?
Azina. I wish I had the answer because it's one of my not too great experiences. Mm. So I'll give you a bit of a background. I raised some money from some investors back in Nigeria to do Azina. And I was going to do Azina for a bit, right? But when I transitioned to start building Food Llama, right? It was just out of curiosity. I was still running Azina and then trying to do Food Llama. Mm. And I thought maybe Food Llama would just be almost like a semi-consulting gig and everything. But I kept kicking the can down the road. The more I got into Food Llama, the more Azina suffered. Mm. Now, when I was coming on Food Llama, I disclosed to my co-founders that I'm doing Azina, right? I disclosed to every investor that we spoke to that I was doing Azina. I was very open. But the mistake I made was I hadn't disclosed to my Azina investors that I was considering or exploring Food Llama. That's the mistake. But the investor that I... Not all my investors, because there's some investor that I had that I had personal relationship with. Like, they knew me like every day. So they knew what was happening on Food Llama side. I kept kicking the can down the road. And that's one big mistake I made because I should have just been very open and just told like, this is what it is. For some of the investors, I converted the equity back to Food Llama and I said, guys, I'm no longer doing Azina. I think I'm a lot more excited about this. For two reasons. The other reason was 2 months into moving into the UK, I became a dad. So it's just difficult to travel when you're a new dad to jump into Nigeria and be jumping planes. So I spent a lot of my focus and a lot more time here. So I communicated with some of them and I said, I'm going to be doing this a lot more. Azina, I don't think I'll be doing Azina a lot more. And what that did was, the people who believed in me actually just transited. But I had one investor, that I think I offended. Not that I think, I know I offended. Because I didn't carry that investor on until it was too late, right? I can only wish if there's any regret I've had in my life, that's one, because I tried to do right by people. That's one major regret that I have. I'm still hoping to do right by this person. Because what I would never had to ever do was I told all my other investors to try to help me reach out to this investor to bring him into the fold. But I think it was not happy the way I handled it. Right now, I'm smarter about those kind of things. I don't kick anything down the road. I've learned to have tough conversations. If even with my co-founders, if I'm having issues, I'm not trying to wait till tomorrow because, like they say, you can die tonight. I just try to have it right now and say, okay, we didn't like the outcomes, or maybe we'll resolve with our chairman. But
So I have a question for you on that, because you had a co-founder at Azina as well. So how did you, and your co-founder is not your co-founder of Food Llama, so how did that relationship kind of like break up?
So with Azina, when I was with my co-founders, I think I already gave them a hint that I was going to move, because they saw how my world changed after the accident. My world really changed after the accident. So they already saw that there was some doubts this guy was having, but I didn't even know. I just knew I wanted to move, but I didn't know exactly where. And I was kind of like tired of Nigeria at that point. So I handed part, well, I handed over to one of my other co-founders to start running, like actively running everything. But they kept also telling me that we needed to notify if things were not going to work out, because I was the powerhouse behind Azina.
Right.
So it was not like a lot. If I pulled out, Azina was not going to run again.
Right.
So the way Azina eventually didn't work out, Azina did eventually work out. We still had the technology for it. And we decided that when I wanted to focus on Food Llama, and when I wanted to bring the investors from, because I sheltered the responsibility for even investors. Mm. We had to notify them and say, hey, Azina didn't pan out, but I'm moving to Food Llama and I'm willing to bring everybody on. I'm willing to bring everybody on Food Llama. And that's how we kind of, I'm still very good friends with my co-founders. I have two co-founders. One of them is, well, two of them have gone back to like paid employment, doing amazing stuff. But I think it's just, we had a really good relationship. We still do, but that conversation wasn't as tough as
yeah,
it wasn't as tough.
That makes sense. So when did you find out that your co-founder at Food Llama was 16?
Okay, so when did I find out? It took me a bit. I think it was when we got my third co-founder. Because now, just a bit of a background on my third co-founder. We're a ragtag team, because my third co-founder, he used to build a company in the US. It was an edtech company, and they were about to be, I'm not supposed to disclose this, but they were positioning for some acquisition by a really big tech player, and lost his co-founder, right?
Oh, wow.
So literally the company ran to ground and kind of like failed, and that was a significant life event for him. So he pulled back into his shell for a few months, was not working on anything. So when I reached out and we started getting on these conversations, we just got to know ourselves a lot more. And that's when I found out that, my third co-founder is actually this young. And I think at that point, I wasn't too sure. I started to doubt, like, I'm more than twice his age. Like, am I willing to do this journey? But the more I got to know him, the more I was impressed. Like, if I was that smart, that impressive at 16, I probably would be competing with Bill Gates right now. And his worldview kind of also shaped my own worldview. And I'm like, this is amazing. And then when my third co-founder also found out he's young, he shared with me, I was like, interesting. But we didn't know about the age because of the levels of wisdom and intelligence and how we handle things. So even now, in the past, when we were doing our first fundraising round, I think we were a bit apologetic about it.
Mm.
Like, what will you tell people?
No,
but we came out of it because my chairman said, if we're in the US, this is a bragging point.
Yeah.
Because you say, we not even made a joke where we said Steve Wozniak and Bill Gates, and he had an elder person. So I'll be like, that's the Bill Gates. Me, I'm like the older person who's got like all these stoic worldviews, kinda like, but this is the younger person who is dynamic. So I mean, yeah, that's like our journey.
How long have you been doing Food Llama so far now? Like 2 years?
Less than 2 years. I'd say actively 17 months, thereabouts.
Two questions. What has been the highest point and the lowest point? Actually three. And what has shocked you the most? Because this is, you're building in a new country for a new audience that you don't even have like a lot of relatability to. Because like, again, the allergies and stuff that we relate to, you're building with people that you haven't met, different contexts as well. Like, it feels like everything is different from all of your experiences so far. So, but of all of those things, what would you say has shocked you? Then what has been the highest and lowest point?
What has shocked me the most? Wow, that's a tough question. I think it's not relating to Food Llama. It's just what has shocked me has actually happened in the last 6 months. It's ChatGPT and AI. That stuff shocks me. It shocked me. And what happens week on week? I think my biggest shock actually came last week, right? So every week, maybe there's a new shock. So I guess we live with shocks. But just seeing what OpenAI launched last week has been a big shock, because I thought we were years into that journey, but they just did it in like 6 months or something. So that's been my biggest shock. Because there's some impact in what they've done, even on my business, right?
Is that something you can talk about?
Not yet. It's a learning point, because, I mean, just before I got on set, is one of the questions that our investors asked. Now we, you know, at some point when crypto was a craze, they'll be like, what's your crypto strategy?
Yeah, now it's AI strategy.
That's been the biggest shock. highest point was the day we launched the product the first time and it worked. Yeah.
You said like it worked, like you didn't expect it to work.
You can have ideas, and we did some prototype before we raised our first round. Yeah, we did what you call Dagbo to make it work. But when the technology worked itself and you are pitching someone like, oh, it actually works, I was very impressed, right? So for me, that's like, there have been a few high points, but that's been the highest point. Lowest point, I don't know, because...
Has it been a smooth ride?
It's not been a smooth ride, but I've learned to calibrate my life, right? So the life of entrepreneurship is just a life of too many no's. Like, you just need a few yeses. Like, every day is just a no. This one is saying no, it won't work. This one is saying... So I've learned to calibrate my life. And what I do is that, what I've done that I think has helped me mentally, is that I've timed certain things. So let's say I apply for something and I get a no. I've set a timer in my head that I only need to mourn that thing for 5 minutes. After 5 minutes, I need to intentionally dislodge myself. Like, so it's difficult for me to get fixated on it. Because especially when you're doing like things like fundraising, trying to sign commercial stuff, you just need to account for the no's. So it's difficult. Yeah, I know a low point. A low point was... Oh, okay. I thought you pointed. Sorry. So I know a low point. A low point was having some issues with a member of my team, and the person filing a court case against me.
Oh wow.
Yeah, that shocked me, because I thought I was considerate. I thought I was nice. And you know that thing when you're doing relationships, like, it's not you, it's me. Yeah. Not me, it's you. So it made me reflect and think about cultural shocks between. Yeah, maybe that's one shock too, because you know, in Nigeria, we can do things of a month in 3 days. Yeah, things of 3 days, you do it in a month, right? So
take your time.
So even language around urgency, right? So for instance, if I give certain members of my team instructions, I'll be like, this is what I want, but this is the priority, only this one thing. So just tell me when we'll do this one thing. These other two or three things, let's reprioritize that. I think language and framing language when you pass instruction has been one thing I've had to learn from that outcome of that relationship, or that low point for me.
That's amazing. What are you looking forward to the most? I mean, because you guys are still in the early stages, right? I think it's still pre-seed.
Yeah.
So there's still a lot of time to just figure out the market, get a lot of product market fit, and just scale. What does that future look like for Foodlama?
Man, I mean, the future for us is constantly evolving. I think there's a Chinese curse that says, may you live in interesting times. And we used to think it was a prayer, but right now we're living through very interesting times. But our mission is still the same. Our mission is, we want to bring a lot more spontaneity, a lot more excitement into shopping for food. Because we think when you shop for food online, it's not as exciting, right? It's missing. Now, there are many pathways to fulfilling that mission, right? We're exploring as many pathways as possible. Whether it's from the point of providing knowledge, or just allowing people to make informed decisions, or even helping brands connect better with consumers that share the same values as them, or even helping retailers understand like the insights that drive consumers' purchases or consumer decisions. We think that there are many pathways to getting there. But for us, the exciting part, or the way I think about like the big picture, or the deep future, is that when you think about your food shopping, you think about Foodlama. And if we scratch a surface of that big picture, that for us will be rewarding. Like, I get excited today when people say, oh, I know you, oh, I know Foodlama. It's very exciting for me, because it seems like yesterday when we were just brainstorming over Zoom, right, on idea, and people are like, oh, I know what Foodlama does, oh, I know what this. It's very exciting for me, very rewarding. And I just look forward to us being able to build a world where people make a lot more informed purchases or decisions about the food they eat.
Yeah, I have three more questions, quick. The first one is, at the beginning of the video, you said you're going to explain what Foodlama is better than I do. So please help us. Tell me a lot more about what Foodlama is.
Okay, so for us at Foodlama, we say we are the smartest way for you to buy your food on the web, online. And the reason is that in this world of abundance of information, when it comes to like food purchase, there's just a lot of things you need to consume. Is this food right for me? What ingredients go into this food? Is this food right for the planet? Like, all these kind of things that you need to consider. The contrast to this is that for many consumers, take an example, when you go into a restaurant, you just go for the safest thing, the thing you're familiar with. You just stick with what you know. You don't want to try something exciting or something new, right? So we want to simplify that process of finding information, right, that makes you buy what works for you. As of today, we function as a personal assistant, a browser extension that you described, that goes with you wherever you shop at the web, right, and tells you, like, this food is right or great for you. But in the future, we want to be that destination where you would originate your purchases from. So if you want to try to buy like the food that has the least carbon footprints, the food that is good for vegans, the food that is great for someone avoiding palm oil and leaves the least impact on the planet, you would come through Foodlama and we'll direct you to where you're buying it. And that's what Foodlama in a nutshell is.
Why did you start with a Chrome extension, with a browser extension?
Good question. I think for us, the reason why we started with a browser extension is consumer behavior is hard. Very hard. Like, it's very hard. Like, I didn't even think we are scratching the surface. So we wanted, browser extensions give you like an advantage in the sense that once you install an extension and you're browsing, we are just somewhere in the corner, right? Yeah. We don't need to initialize your thought process to go and launch the app, right? Yeah. Because we're just there. You just see this browser extension that's just there in the background and working. And we think that beyond acquisition, cost of driving engagement, telling consumers to return to the app is significant if you launch a native app compared to like a browser extension. So for us, we wanted a platform that would allow us to build trust that if you acquired you once, we will continue to deliver value for you in the background, right? And you start to build trust and start to say, oh, I trust Foodlama. And then when we transition to a future where we say, come to originate your purchases from us, you can originate your purchases from us. And so we found like the most effective way was to do Chrome extension or browser extensions. But there's also a more activist way we are thinking about it, right? That's a longer journey. We think that with all the things that is playing out in the world, web apps are going to be more important. We think the amount of power that players like App Store and Play Store have is significant. So a lot of, there's even a movement around open web that a lot more apps would not require you to download through the App Store. You just launch your browser and it starts from that environment. And so in that world, you will start to see, and we're seeing it with ChatGPT, with plugins,
yeah,
where apps would reside on the web. They will not reside through like an app itself or an app store itself. So we see that we want to be at the forefront of that. And so that's one of the reasons why we...
That's amazing. You've told me your story and I feel like I know you a lot better now, but I'm wondering, what are the key lessons that you've learned so far from Nesto, right? And doing chemical engineering to being a lesson teacher, to selling GDO, right?
GLD.
To starting two businesses in Nigeria, then starting Foodlama in the UK. Like, it's a very dynamic journey. And like you said, one of the privileges you've had is that you've been able to do many things that gives you a lot of context. But in all of this, what are like maybe two or three key lessons that you still hold on to and say, hey, whenever I think about this, it helps me or propels me to do better, or something that I think I can pass on to somebody else that can help their journey?
I mean, so I wish I had an answer for that because it's a trap. And I learned
this. No,
it's
not.
I learned this from Akinbello Osage when he said, when the famous question around, tell us like your recipe for success. Because when he says it, and maybe in 3 years, he discovers that he's not succeeding as well.
But it's your personal lesson.
Did the recipes, do they become invalid or anything? But yeah, I get what you mean. And if I reflect on this, I think the first one I would say is, just be an amazing human. I think that is significant for me. One of my superpowers, I say that one of my superpowers is just being able to connect with people, right? It's a significant superpower I have. So I'll give an example. When I came into the UK, I knew that I didn't school in the UK. I didn't work in the UK. So I'm going to be deficient significantly in terms of like networks. So I was very aggressive. Like, people were like, guy, when are you having time to build your venture? I was going to all the events. I was doing, was a calendar, right? I was going everywhere because I knew I needed to break into networks. And I found out that climes that are in the West, right? So places like the UK, like the US, right? There are only three ways you break into networks, right? And I didn't have any of the two, whether going to good, the best schools or working like some of the best companies in the UK. So I had to take like the hustle route and be in people's faces. So I think that the first for me is that just be a decent human. Be ready to help people. I'm always looking for opportunities for people. I'm like, what are you doing? Okay, I know I can connect you with someone. I'm always doing that. The second I would say is something that TJ, my former boss, he's still always a boss, but taught me, which is Moon, minute observation of nature. It's a significant influence on my outlook on life. I try to break patterns very intentionally. And people sometimes will say I'm weird. Like, I say some things that you'd be like, ah, this guy's weird. But I try to break patterns. Like, I'm like, oh, let's pass that route. Oh, don't let's do this. Oh, don't let's watch this. Oh, don't let's do this. Because I've learned that the only way you can create stuff is to get unfamiliar with stuff. Like the things you're too familiar with can make
so you always leave your comfort zone and expose your mind.
Yeah. So that's the second thing. What's the third thing? I'm feeling like I'm spitting wisdom here, but even
you're feeling it.
That's not what I'm saying. I feel like I'm supposed to speak wisdom, but I don't know if I'm speaking.
No, you're just supposed to tell me your own lessons.
Yeah, I think the third thing is something that I've come to learn since being a dad. Like, you can get caught up in this race. We're all going to die, right? So I think just savor the journey, because I see a lot of younger people, and I'm still young, but I see a lot of younger people who they're trying to do this. Like, just cherish the journey, right? You succeed, you fail, you're still gonna die, right? So savor the journey. I'm learning a lot more to savor the journey. Sometimes I just shut out everything. I just want to play with my daughter. I spend hours with her and do nothing. I think just savor the journey. There's no race. You see people saying I'm racing to raise money. I'm racing to build. There's no race. Like, it's good to be ambitious. It's good to be driven, but just savor the journey. Just
build stuff and enjoy the journey. That makes sense. I think something that you said, all of the lessons are amazing, but I think the one that really strikes me the most is the one that just around being an amazing human and going out of your way to break into networks. Because as an immigrant like myself, like, just when you come into a space like this, you're black, you're Nigerian, you're trying to, I want to, you know, when you're writing your technical visa, you write all the many things that you want to do, but how easy is it to do it? So you still find a lot of people who are moving, still being in the same circles, are still building ourselves, but you have managed to say, hey, I'm building people that are very different from me, for a market that's very different from me, and to get the success I need, I have to be very deliberate about it and just like coming out of yourself. I think that's just, that's something that I'm still learning. So I'm like, I see why I'm always seeing you outside.
I'm still learning, but I also see that it's rewarding for me. Mm. So I forgot. One last thing I think I've become a super person at is automating stuff, right? So right now people say, oh, I see you on LinkedIn everywhere. I'm like, I don't even know what is on my LinkedIn because I've automated the heck out of many things. Like, so outreaches, I'm just automating everything. I'm just waiting for like the final action. So if there's anything I leave anybody with, automate the heck out. There's just too many tools that's,
you make your life from. Simplify your life.
Simplify your life, man. Yeah.
I agree. Thank you so much, Damilare.
Thanks for having me.
This was amazing. I really like this conversation. I like the way you just flowed your story. It shows that you're pitching a lot.
Always pitching. I don't think you'll find any founder that's not always pitching.
But that's amazing. I'm wishing you good success with Foodlama.
Thank you.
I'm rooting for you. You have no idea.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast to the end. I hope you really enjoyed this episode. I hope that you have been inspired or motivated to get better in your careers, in your businesses, in your life. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please make sure you subscribe to the videos on my YouTube channel at PC Timmy, or just search for Founders Connect and you'll find the playlist and then subscribe to the channel. Also, please subscribe to this podcast wherever you are listening to it. Leave a rating also so more people can find it, and also talk about the episode that you listen to. #FoundersConnect across social media. Hey, I'll see you in the next episode. Peace out.